Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We now welcome in studio Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, brother. How you doing?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Glad you're here. And I'm going to tell you what, timing is everything in the world and in our business, too. You had done this feature on Patrick Mahomes for NFL Network. You've been talking about that for several appearances here on the Border Patrol. And you wrote a lengthy feature that was out last week, I think on September 11th. And, I mean, you didn't know. None of us knew. We all were.
We were hoping.
We're all hoping.
Yeah.
And so the day that this damn thing debuts on NFL Network, later on, so it comes a week after he throws four touchdown passes against the Chargers, and then this thing airs. The big gamble, you know, talking about the Chiefs and what they did and why they believe in Mahomes, and you write the feature. And so then, just to back you up, he throws six touchdown passes at Pittsburgh.
Take that.
I mean,
living right.
You know, go to the casino. You know, I don't know, right? Living right. And you're sitting there, you're thinking, you know, hopefully this is going to end up pretty good. And he starts off fast, and there's going to be more attention on the feature that you wrote and the feature you did for NFL.com. You couldn't imagine that. Nobody could have imagined that.
No. And really, when I pitched the story to my bosses back in June, it was more just – actually, back in May, it was more of a, hey, look, this guy has got all kinds of hype around him. Everybody's excited about him in Kansas City. He's got a lot of charisma to him. He's looks like he's going to be a star from what everybody keeps saying. Let's roll the dice on this one. Yeah, because I did a story last year on David Johnson that was supposed to run the first week or the second week of the season, same time frame, and – he fractured his wrist in the first game and was down.
Opposite.
That was it. So that one sat on the shelf and we'll never see it again. So I was a little bit nervous in that first game, but once he came out, had four touchdown passes, I felt pretty good about it. And then he had three in the first quarter, and I was just like, oh, this is – thank you, God. This is good karma coming back on me.
So you got the people in the NFL Network on the phone. What other ideas you got?
That's right. Everybody was excited then. Yeah, all week they were excited for this one. And look, I think even the biggest Patrick Mahomes fan or believer, I guess that'd be you, that I know of, couldn't have foreseen what he did in that game. And I know everybody's going to talk about the arm strength. And for me, it was the decision-making. And it was just the vision. And when I went back and watched some of the touchdown passes, just he is so right now comfortable – running that offense, being a top-flight NFL quarterback, and by that I mean trusting his reads, trusting his preparation, trusting his game plan. When you really think about it, there was only one touchdown pass in those six that was really him out of the pocket, gunslinging, the one to Robinson that I would put down as like a gunslinger-type play. Everything else was just reading the defense, seeing what they're doing, and making the throw. And for me, that's if he can do that in the third game of his NFL career, in the second game of his first season as a starter, sky's the limit. And I always thought he would be a pretty good quarterback. Now you have to wonder, is he going to set records this season at the pace he's on? Because everything's within reach now, right? Ten touchdown passes in the first 2 weeks.
Nobody's ever done that. He already set the record. No quarterback has ever thrown 10 touchdown passes in the first two games of a season. So it's all on the table.
Yeah, and I thought it was wild what Deshaun Watson did last year when he had 19 through six games or seven games, whatever it was, which was the record then, I think, or most touchdown passes in a month for a rookie starter. And to do what Patrick's doing now and the way he's doing it, it blows you away. I will say that it's almost like they have to do it this way, right?
Right.
there's no other choice. I don't know if they had their druthers, and it seems strange to say this after you've scored 80 points in your first two games, if you would say, oh, this is what we've always wanted. But I was on the field before the game talking to multiple people in the organization, and the vibe that I kept getting was, boy, we got to score some points.
Right.
We got to put some points up.
You know,
like, they know.
Right.
On the other side, what's happening?
But like, as high powered as his offense is, then you readjust what you have to ask your defense to do. So,
yeah.
for example, I mean, they came out and got back to back three and out to start the game, and then stopped Pittsburgh and had them attempt a field goal. And they missed a field goal, and it's just like that, 21-0.
Yeah.
And so it shows that you got to keep up with the Chiefs' offense. And then the second half, after they gave up a touchdown on the first drive, they got three straight. They forced three straight punts. And look, you're grasping for straws at you know, trying to compliment the defense, but it was enough to where Pittsburgh's offense couldn't keep up. And then, you know, Chris Conley fumbled the ball with 5 minutes left as the Chiefs were driving to put the game away and run the clock out. To that point in the second half, up until 5 minutes left when Chris Conley's fumble occurred, they'd only given up 7 points to the Steelers. And again, you're talking about a defense that has given up over 1,000 yards and everything else, but they don't have to. I'm not even sure they have to be good. They just have to be average or even slightly below average.
Yeah, I think they have to be good at times, and they have made the plays they've had to make.
Right, and at times they were good, but at times they were awful. But they got that six stops, and that's if you tell me the defense is going to get six stops, that might be enough in a game.
Yeah, and I think as much as I've been down on the defense all off season, sometimes you get so down on them you act like they're never going to make a play. Which isn't fair, right? These are professionals too, and they're going to make plays, and they've made the plays they've had to make. And in fact, if Kendall Fuller picks off a pass down in the red zone late in that game, it's not even as close as it is.
He was there.
He was there. He made a great play on the ball. So I give them credit. D Ford's playing well. They found a way to. I think what is happening, and what will be interesting to watch over the next few weeks, is that the Chiefs understand they have to be hyper-aggressive, not just super. It's not just come out and just, hey, we're going to script 15 plays and see what happens. They're coming out and trying to score. And what I've seen from San Diego and from Pittsburgh, they haven't matched that intensity. I mean, Pittsburgh really, when they had the ball, they threw a long pass, it didn't complete. Then they threw a short pass and got a blocking in the back call. And then it was 3rd and 12, and then they just couldn't do anything.
Right.
Like, if you were going to play the Chiefs right now, you better be able to either have a long drive that leads to points, or you better get a touchdown. Leads to a field goal, you better get a touchdown. You can't come out and be behind them, because you're right. It's like giving Usain Bolt a head start. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you're just not going to catch them. And you're going to put so much pressure on yourself as an offense and a defense. That's the way it felt all game, was that Pittsburgh and the Chargers were just – they were off balance. And so that's a testament to Andy and the offense, and not just Mahomes, but the offensive line too. I mean, they've given him a lot of time to throw the football.
You know, and I was interested too to see how the Chiefs were going to come out in the second half, because after they built that lead, they got rolled in the second quarter, 21-0.
Yeah.
And a couple of false start penalties that put them in bad situations at third down, and they didn't score on those drives, and Pittsburgh started to roll. And so they go into halftime, Pittsburgh has all the momentum, and what happened? First drive right out of the gate, drives them right down, touchdown. Pittsburgh answers.
Yeah.
And then another touchdown. Pittsburgh couldn't answer. And we're going to find it even more once they're down in the game, once they're maybe down 10 points, and see what happens. But I liked their response, and I'm glad you said something about being more aggressive, because I think the defense needs to be more aggressive, because I thought they were more aggressive and made some adjustments and simplified things and tried to send more things at Roethlisberger, because guess what? If you're rushing three and dropping eight, he's just going to pick you apart all the way down the field.
Yeah.
So take your shot into forcing a mistake, and they did get to him a couple times and force bad throws. Don't just sit back there and let him pick you apart. You know, be aggressive, because you have. If you give up a big play, so what? The Chiefs can match it offensively.
Yeah, nothing to lose. And that's really, when you have the kind of offense the Chiefs has right now, you can take more chances defensively, because you can recover. You even if you give up a big play, you can feel like, okay, we'll get it back. And that's what's working for them now. I think Sam Mellinger said this to me after the game, because we were having dinner with a bunch of star people, and I said 1,000 points in 1,000 yards and 65 points in 2 games, and they're 2-0. I said, I would bet you that in the history of football, of NFL football, that's never happened. And he had looked it up, and I guess it happened like 8 times where a defense had allowed 1,000 yards, and I think it's 1,000 yards. And the best, every other team was 0-2 except for one, and that team was 1-1. Like the New Orleans Saints last year had the similar numbers. They were 1,000 yards given up first 2 games, and they recovered and went on to have a really good season running the football and doing all that stuff. But it's just hard to do it because as easy as they're making it look, like they're also, their margin for error is also pretty tight, right? Like if they're not hitting a lot of these plays early, like if that Conley play happens and it's a 3-point game, if Patrick Mahomes drops the football, Steelers recover.
Right.
You know, a lot of things, if Chris Boswell makes that field goal that he missed in the first half when it was 28-28, then the Steelers are up 31-28. You know, there's a lot of things that can happen that we don't talk about now that don't matter because they win. I never, like, crap on a win. I think if you get a win, you got the win. But it is going forward. I would bet you, even in this game, I bet you now teams are going to be game planning for Patrick Mahomes. It's not going to be, hey, Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill, take these guys. It's going to be we're coming after him. Because even as you watch the All-22 on that game, it's clear the Steelers were taking some gambles that hurt them in the end. Like the first touchdown pass to Conley, if you watch the film, they're running a single high safety, and they drop a couple guys in the zone coverage. They show single high, and they drop in the zone. But when Kelce comes over the middle on that play, the same play he ended up scoring touchdowns on, he hooks over the middle. 4 guys jump the route, and you just see Chris Conley just, you know, wide right. open back of the end zone. Now, that's a great read on Mahomes' part. Now, they soften it up. All of a sudden, Kelce's running loose down the middle of the field. They're going to start trying to do things to – but I didn't see a lot of disguising. I didn't see as much as I've seen in the past with when they played Alex Smith or anybody else really for that matter. Because what's going to happen is the longer Mahomes plays, the more people are going to have a read on what he does well and doesn't do well. And so the team will start attacking him. And that'll be interesting to see how he responds to that. Even Andy said that after the game. The challenge now is people are going to study him, and he's going to have to stay ahead of the game.
But the good thing is, like, if you're a Chiefs fan, like, what the hell do you do? Who do you take away? Like you mentioned some of these skill position guys. There's so much talent around him. So okay, so you got Tyreek Hill, and then you got Kelce, and then oh by the way, then you see Watkins had 100 yards and a 31-yard run, and then a fourth or a fifth option in Chris Conley and DeMarcus Robinson. It is an overwhelming amount of skill position talent, and I didn't even mention Kareem Hunt. That's why, I mean, the situation he's in, plus what he's shown pre-snap, that's overwhelming for defenses.
Yeah, and you also. Like they game plan really well for the Steelers because there are multiple times in that game, at least 3 to 4 that I can even right now recall, where you could just see the formation that the Chiefs were running and the Steelers were caught off guard. They were trying to – they had running backs split out wide. They were trying to get their linebackers out there. They were receivers standing alone for 2 or 3 seconds without being covered, and the Steelers had to get together on the same page to figure out what covers they wanted to run for that. So they did a great job of seeing what the Steelers had done previously. And I get the sense, and again, I don't want to diminish what the Chiefs did, but before the game I ran into Charlie Batch, the old Steelers quarterback, mm-hmm. and I said, what do you think of this game? He said, there's going to be a lot of points scored. And I said, you think the Steelers can hang with them, with the Chiefs offensively? He's like, or can control them offensively? He's like, their defense is not as good as it's been in the past. That's what he said to me. And that's no knock on what the Chiefs did. I think they would have done it anyway. But that team, different storyline, that team's in disarray. Oh. That team has obviously got a lot of – if you just – coming into the game, you knew it with the running back situation. But watching them play and watching their mistakes and seeing Antonio Brown on the sideline, it was a meltdown in the second half for them. And I've never seen them look as, you know, beaten down at the end of a game as they were in that contest. But to answer your question, though, I think that aggressiveness is going to be the key for the Chiefs going forward. And I would suspect that you're going to see a lot more teams focusing less on their run game and more on Patrick Mahomes. I think if you're picking your poison, you're probably going to say, I'd rather have a guy carry the ball 30 times than a quarterback throw six touchdown passes against us.
We have Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com in studio. We'll talk more about the Chiefs' victory over the Steelers, preview their home opener coming up against the San Francisco 49ers. We'll talk about Josh Gordon being traded to the New England Patriots, and also the day Bud Dupree had yesterday on social media. We'll get thoughts from Jeff Chedia on all those topics coming up right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Border Patrol is presented by locally owned and operated Walker Uniform Service. For uniforms, industrial towels, mats, mops, and restroom products that enhance the look of your business, go to walkeruniform.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We have Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com in studio. Jeff, we had one of our listeners text in. Justin wants to know where they can, or if they can, rewatch the piece that you did on Patrick Mahomes that aired on Sunday morning.
Oh, I will. I'll tweet it out.
You tweet it out?
I'll tweet it to you.
Okay.
You can.
All right.
Send it to all your followers.
All the Mahomes lovers
all
out
the
there.
Mahomes.
Follow me. Yes.
The Mahomes.
I watched it. It was very good. I read the feature that was very good. That starts off with why. Was this true? Tell me about this.
What's
obviously
that?
You wrote about it, so it's got to be true. But you described the scene of the World Series, the Mets getting ready playing the World Series,
yeah.
And his dad, Pat Mahomes, as pitcher for the Mets, and club officials had kind of warned him that it might be a little bit too dangerous to have his 5-year-old son shagging fly balls before game one of the World Series.
Yeah.
But he's got Patrick Mahomes the second out in the outfield at 5 years old, and Robin Ventura hits a towering shot,
mm-hmm.
and a 5-year-old Patrick Mahomes the second's back there, and is fielding fly ball and makes the catch,
yeah.
and all the other players are
yeah.
looking around like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So who did you, his dad told
his dad
that
told
story?
The story? Yeah, and there's actually a photo in the story. It
Good
goes
Lord.
By real fast, so you can see him. Mike Hampton behind him where he's going to chase the fly ball. And his dad said that this was happened quite a bit where he would let him go out there and hang out in the outfield and catch fly balls. And everybody would tell him that you could get killed out here doing this.
Right.
And his whole response was, look, he'll find out if he can do it or not. Like, he's got to learn somehow. And if he gets hit in the head, then, oh, well, we won't do it anymore. But he had that sense of, I'm not going to baby this kid. I'm going to let him go out there and figure it out for himself. And LaTroy Hawkins, who played with Patrick Mahomes Sr. and was a longtime reliever like Pat's dad, reaffirmed that. He just said that's the way he grew up, just knowing that, okay, you're going to go out here and you're going to find out for yourself if you can do it or not. And that's probably where this whole mentality of testing himself, taking chances came from.
And so you talked to his dad, you talked to his mom. You did extensive research for the story, and you described the his move to football. So here is a kid, obviously, people looked at him as a baseball prospect because of his dad, and he was throwing 91
mm-hmm.
by the time he was in eighth grade.
Yeah.
But then he played some high school football, and he wanted to play quarterback, but they had him playing safety, and he wanted to quit football because they wouldn't let him play quarterback. But his mom kept him in football?
Kept him in. He was a defensive back, a safety his first couple years, and he was a pretty athletic prospect at that point. He went to the University of Texas to get to a recruiting camp, and his dad went with him, and he was talking to a coach who would come up and talk to Patrick about coming to Texas at some point, and the dad told Patrick that, look, he must not have watched any film of you because you haven't hit anybody all year. That's because I told you not to hit anybody
right.
all year. And he was a pretty good safety as far as picking off passes and reading things, but he wanted to be a quarterback. They had a quarterback ahead of him who was a pretty good baseball player who I think went on to play college baseball somewhere in Texas. And so he had to wait his turn, and he got to the end of his second year, his sophomore season, and he told his mom, I don't want to do this anymore. He was a pretty good basketball player as well. Could have been a D1 player. If you can go Google his stuff, YouTube his basketball highlights. He's pretty good shooter. And his mom said, look, just give it one more training camp, you know, the big thing for him was that he was playing with a lot of his high school friends all the way through growing up. And so he played football essentially just to be around those guys. When he talks about the way he is now, being in the locker room and being around the team, like, he loves that stuff. And so his mom said, look, it's going to kill you if you're sitting on the sidelines watching all your friends play football. And so that was enough to convince him to keep playing. And he got to be the quarterback his junior year and threw for like 4,500 yards and 40 touchdowns, and everything changed for him because all of a sudden he was running the show. It was, you know, Friday Night Lights in Texas. He loved the electricity of the atmospheres that he was playing in. And I think he told his mom, like, no one comes to the baseball games. No one comes to the basketball games. Right. Everybody's coming to the football games.
Well, it's Texas.
Yeah. And as humble as he is, he has that quality as well, that he likes the spotlight on him. He likes rising to the occasion. And just as going back to the outfield story, just having it all on his shoulders, he really responds to that.
And so his dad wanted him to play baseball. And so when Patrick decides, okay, football is what I'm pursuing, how much pushback did he get from his dad? Was his dad cool with it, or was his dad trying to convince him to pursue baseball?
Oh, the dad was pushing baseball the whole time,
right?
Up until the point that he signed to play football at Texas Tech. In fact, LaTroy Hawkins told me that at one point Patrick Sr. called LaTroy and said, talk to your godson for me, because he's like – he is going crazy. He wants to seriously pursue a football career when all these baseball scouts are coming to his games. He can play a sport that has a much longer career span.
Did his dad think he was good enough to play football, or just he wanted
to? Oh, his dad knew. His dad saw the potential in him. His dad thought he could play anything at a high level. But he just felt like baseball was a much better route to take, and an easier route at that point, because Patrick had only been a quarterback his first year. He was still considered, even with the big numbers, a raw prospect, as Cliff Kingsbury, his coach, told me. Like, he wasn't like – Texas Tech was the first school to come in on him hard, and he signed with them, first big school. But his dad felt like, look, you can go be a first or second round pick, get $5 million signing bonus and be set. Like, why are you fooling around with this stuff? And Patrick, to his credit, he felt like, this is what I love. This is what moves me. And maybe because he'd been around baseball his whole career, this was the new shiny toy, and he wanted to give it a go. But when he signed with Texas Tech, there was no guarantee that he was going to be an NFL quarterback. And, in fact, his mom said he wasn't even talking about, I'm going to the NFL. He just wanted to play football. He loved football that much, he didn't even care how it ended for him. And that's how he kind of got into it.
Okay, so fast forward to he's actually becoming a football prospect, NFL prospect. You describe in your story Brett Veach early on, seeing him as a prospect and trying to push these highlights, to push this film on Andy Reid. You got to look at this kid. Mm-hmm. And of course, John Dorsey was the GM when the Chiefs drafted Mahomes. But the dynamic, hey, Andy Reid, he's the power broker, right?
Yeah.
And I always took note right off the bat. And even I remember, and you were there at the press conference to introduce Brett Veach as a GM. They kept pushing that, Mahomes, that was Veach's guy. Veach's guy. Almost trying to,
like safety.
Take it away, but take that away from Dorsey. He said, no, Veach was the guy that was pushing for Mahomes and went after Mahomes. But you write about that, how Veach was all over this guy. And, bringing film to Andy, you got to look at this kid. This kid's something else. And so, and you talked to Veach also in the future. You sat down with him. And so tell me a little bit about that, because I think that's interesting. When he was, before he was a GM, this is a guy that he was going to bat for.
Yeah,
right?
He saw him as a sophomore, his sophomore year, because when Patrick got to Tech, he was playing behind Davis Webb, who eventually transferred. Imagine Baker Mayfield, Davis Webb, and three NFL quarterbacks being on the same roster at the same time, and two end up transferring. But he sat behind Davis Webb. He got into some games when Webb got hurt, and he played well down the stretch and got the job his second year. And so that's when Veach really started to see him and started to follow him. And he saw all the physical stuff, you know, the arm strength and the vision and just the mobility. But what he also liked, and I think what to me what separates Patrick from a lot of young quarterbacks is just, and you've seen it, you've been around him, is just that calmness and that maturity and that comfort level where he knows who he is. And that was coming across as well. It wasn't just, here's another guy with all these physical tools who can make great plays. It was like, here's a leader, and here's a player who really understands how to play quarterback at a school where you're going to put up big numbers regardless of what you do. And his head coach said the same thing about him, that this guy is so humble. He loves the challenge. He loves the spotlight. He has an ego, but he's also humble. And so when Vitor saw those things, he really gravitated towards him. And, yeah, he kept going to Andy and putting tapes on his desk and saying, you got to watch this kid. You got to watch him. You got to see him. And this was 2 years before they were even going to draft him. And eventually Andy was like, yeah, I see what you're saying. I see what you see. And when they brought him in for the visit, he was here for 6 hours, and Andy spent 2 hours with him.
And he throws everything. These quarterbacks that he interviews, he throws everything at him,
everything,
right?
On the whiteboard. And when he left the office, like, Veach came in, like, he was waiting outside.
Right. What do you think?
Yeah, what are you thinking? And Andy said, yeah, this kid's pretty smart. And I think that's when it changed. I think that's when Patrick Mahomes really became a real viable option for the Chiefs, because Andy did not want to have anybody in here after Alex who couldn't manage the offense. I mean, it's a huge playbook. And over 5 years, they put so much stuff into the playbook that he didn't want to take a step back with what he wanted to be able to do with the guys he had here on offense.
What do you say? They had to find a guy that had the gigabytes necessary,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
I love that.
Point. Yeah, he had the gigabytes to do it. And it was fun to hear those guys talking about it, because you could tell that this has been for them an interesting journey in its own right. That I don't want to say an experiment, because it wasn't that. They really believed in this kid from day one. But what I think is really intriguing about Patrick now is that sometimes people think, well, what could he have been last year if he was playing? He wouldn't have been anywhere close to what he is right now. I think he had to go through last year to be what he is today, because they taught him a lot about playing the position, about making decisions, all the good things he brought in. They added other elements to his game, and you see the end result. It's like he's playing like a guy who's played 10 years in the NFL, and that's largely because of who he is as a person, how he approaches the game, how he studies, how he works at it. But it's also because they had a plan in place for him. And when I saw Brett Veach before the game, and he said that he and Andy had watched the story before the game, and I was thinking, you're getting ready to play a team you've lost to six times in the last seven games, and you're going to watch a story about your quarterback. But that's how excited they are about him too.
I just retweeted that feature that you did on Patrick Mahomes, and it's a must read for any Chiefs fan. It was man, it was great, Jeff. I really enjoyed reading it. So if you want, go to @SSJWHB, and I just retweeted that right now. And so after spending time with Patrick Mahomes, okay, so you talked to his dad, you talked to his mom, you talked to LaTroy Hawkins and Veach and Reed. So then after you talked to him, right, mm-hmm. And you've talked to all these quarterbacks, yeah. You talked to young quarterbacks, veteran quarterbacks, is there something that you see in him, in his personality, in the way he carries himself, something that maybe is a common trait, or that you see in other great quarterbacks you covered, or something that from the person, not on the field, just from him, the way he carries himself, that leads you to believe he's going to be as successful as all these people think he's going to be?
Yes, and now that I've been around him a little bit more and spent time with him, and I was around, you know, this is going into very dangerous territory with someone
it.
Like you.
Yeah, come on. I'm here for it. Come on.
But I was around Tom Brady.
Yes, you were.
At the start of his career, when he got the chance to play in place of Drew Bledsoe.
And Drake, give me a cigarette, would you please?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Keep talking. Go on.
And he'd had two or three games where he really played well and surprised some people. And I remember sitting down with him and talking to him and seeing him in the locker room. And there was a lot of controversy around that team, because everybody was wondering when Bledsoe was coming back, if Brady was going to keep the job. I remember seeing him, how he carried himself and how he handled himself. And he was again, like Patrick, he was so cool, so easygoing. Moment wasn't too big for him. He had really an air about him. And I remember one of their receivers, David Patton.
Right.
And he was there as a in Brady's first year. And he said he would watch Brady, you know, run the offense when he had chances of running. He'd see him in the locker room carrying himself around, and he would see him working out and talking about stuff with receivers. And he said, man, if this guy is this way as the backup, what's he gonna be like as the starter? And that's how I view Patrick now. And it's there are some guys who you can watch them in difficult moments in stressful situations, and they just never feel like it affects them. And he has that to him. And I don't know if it's just him or how he grew up, how he was raised or whatever, or what he's been through the last couple of years, but it's definitely a part of his game. That sense of, I don't really understand what all the hype was about. And I was with Tom Brady after he won his first Super Bowl in his hotel room with his girlfriend, and he was sitting there watching the replay of the game. And
I've never heard this story.
Yeah, you never heard this story? Yeah. Well, that was the thing back at Sports Illustrated where my friend Mike Silver would always write the game story after the Super Bowl, and myself and Peter King, other reporters would go out and get information from other people to feed to him so he could write a big story, because he couldn't do it. He had to be in his hotel room writing. And so I was assigned to Brady because I knew him from doing the earlier story on him. So so I had to finagle my way onto the team bus. So I was on the team bus with him when they left the stadium, went back to the hotel. I looked like a player when I was walking in, so I just kind of walked in with Willie McGinnis and Ty Law and all these guys, got
good
in the
luck,
elevator
good
with
luck.
Tom.
Good luck today, Jeff.
Through security, people were high-fiving me.
Go get them.
And that's after the game. They were like,
congrats,
oh,
you won.
We got it. Yeah. And so we went up to his room with his girlfriend at the time and Tom and his best friend, and we were watching the game, and his agent came in and was joking that, hey, you know, you can go buy that house you wanted to buy, and he had to go see the head coach to talk about whether he could go to Disney World. And that was a big thing after you were the MVP.
Right.
And so he went up to Belichick's room and said, hey, coach, can I go to Disney World tomorrow? Can I not take the team plane back? I want to go to Florida. I got invited. And he's like, Tom, you just won the Super Bowl. You can do whatever you want to do. And I kind of feel like that's how Patrick would handle winning the Super Bowl. It wouldn't be, look what I just did, how great I am. I validated myself. It would be, okay, that was fun. And just like he was after this game, at the Pittsburgh game, I don't think he really understood the gravity of what he'd accomplished or what he'd done. It was just part of his destiny. And I think that's the thing. I saw it in Brady. I saw it in Aaron Rodgers, too, early in their career. There's just something about those guys that the moment is there for them. It's not like there to overwhelm them. It's not there to, you know, make them anxious or nervous. Like, some guys just have that quality. And to me, everybody loves his arm strength. It's amazing. But that quality is what makes you an elite quarterback.
So something else, I think, along those lines, and I mentioned Bud Dupree, the former first-round pick out of Kentucky, linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Jeremy Fowler from ESPN covers the Steelers, tweeted out this quote about Patrick Mahomes from Bud Dupree. And Jeremy Fowler wrote, Steelers thought they were ready for Mahomes, but he was better at the line of scrimmage than most young quarterbacks, according to Bud Dupree. And here's the quote. I don't think we gave him enough credit. I think he was better than we thought. I feel like his intelligence was better than we thought. We thought since he was a young quarterback, we could trick him, but he kind of spread us out. He didn't snap the ball fast, so he was really trying to read us, seeing where the weaknesses were before he snapped the ball. Many young quarterbacks can't really check like that. He showed us otherwise. And then I think back to Aqib Talib after that game in Denver last year when he was on a radio show 2 days later, and they asked him, so what did you see from this kid Mahomes? He says, I saw that Alex Smith's going to be on another team next year.
Yeah.
But when you get these other defenders saying that stuff, that's what you're talking about. They're not talking about the arm strength. They're talking about the other things, the intangibles that surprise you. You don't expect from a kid making his third start.
Yeah, right? And arm strength, and I've said it before, and I'm not just me saying this. This is what people have told me, and I've played football too, so I understand this. Arm strength is overrated when it comes to a quarterback. I was in L.A. last week doing some TV, and I was with Rod Woodson, you know, one of the best, arguably one of the top five cornerbacks to ever play football.
Right.
And we were talking about Mahomes, and he was just like, he's like, the only thing about his arm that scares me is if he's going to throw it to the wrong person. Like, I want to see, like, how he handles things, how he sees things, how patient he is. And the point he was making was, is the same point that Bud Dupree just made, that what's going to separate him is seeing the little stuff, because NFL defenders aren't so concerned about how hard you can throw it. They're more concerned about what you see. And when you go back and watch, I know you watched all 22s. When you go back and watch his touchdown passes, I want you to look at the two passes he threw to Kelce.
Because
you're going to see their linebacker. I don't know his name. It's number 98. And it's very clear that Patrick picked up on the fact that that guy doesn't get enough depth in his pass drops. Because those two touchdown passes, you can see that guy, Kelce, going by him, and Mahomes doesn't hesitate. He's going right to him because he realizes that linebacker isn't savvy enough as a defender to get deep enough in a two-deep zone to take away that seam route.
So Vince Williams.
Yeah, Vince Williams. So he saw that. You see the touchdown pass of Tyreek Hill. You look at the All-22. You see on the bottom of the screen, you see two Pittsburgh defenders. They're playing – single high man coverage. Two guys on the bottom playing off. The guy on the top, Artie Burns, number 25, is right up on Tyreek Hill. Again, Patrick Mahomes is thinking, that's a shot I can take because there's no way that safety can beat, can get to Tyreek Hill before I can get the ball on him. The play to Connelly, again, reading four defenders jumping Kelce and then going over the top down the seam to Connelly. It's those are the things. It seems like you watch it on film, like it's so easy, but that stuff is happening within like 2-3 seconds. And it's happening against top flight athletes. And so to be able to make those adjustments and see that stuff, his vision is incredible. And someone told me a funny story about him last week. I don't know if it was in the training camp or in mini camp, but they said he was rolling to his left and he threw a ball back to his right. He kept looking the other way. No look pass.
Right.
And he threw it like 25 yards the other direction. And so half the team was like, man, did you see that? And the other half, at least some of the coaches were like, yeah, that's phenomenal, but that stuff's going the other way.
Right.
So it scares the crap out of us.
Right.
So let's not do that in a game. And I haven't seen him do that in a game yet because, you know, again, he's gotten more disciplined and he's realized that. I think his two most underrated qualities right now, he's got a photographic memory. People say that all the time, and I believe it. And if you have a photographic memory, that makes it a lot easier to read defenses and to watch film. Other thing is that his vision is off the charts. He can see. Some people can just see everything. And that's how Brady is. That's how Rodgers is. Some people can just see everything without any problem. And it's almost like if you ever see that X-Men movie where the guys, the speedy guys running around,
right.
And like I forget the name of the character, but he's running in circles and Quicksilver, yeah, and everybody else is like him.
Perfect guy to have
nice,
here.
There he is, right on time. And so everybody else is like in slow motion, or he's in slow motion. Right. Everybody else is almost like standing still, and I think that's how he sees the game. He sees it so fast, and he's so decisive in what he sees that it's hard to defend him right now.
Now, the other quote that made news from Steelers linebacker Bud Dupree yesterday was, and he has since apologized and said he should just ignore people on Twitter that are criticizing him. A Steelers fan tweeted at him after the game, Bud Dupree, where the F were you all game? And spelled it out. Let's see, there's the tweet they sent at him.
Yeah.
And here's his reply that he sent a direct message back to that to Steelers fan. And it read, I was at your girl house laid up. What you going to do? Any thoughts on Bud Dupree's comeback there?
Yeah.
You know what? He played like he was at someone's girl's house laid up, so I'm not sure if that was too far off. But
That speaks to Pittsburgh's whole problem.
Right.
Right. They got a lot. They're making more attention by what they're doing off the field than what they're doing on the field. And it's not just him. It's Le'Veon Bell not being there and tweeting after the game. It's all the drama between him and his linemen. It's Antonio Brown.
Trade me, let's find out.
And I saw Antonio Brown after the game. I was standing in front of the Chiefs locker room, and I knew he was hot. And Drew Rosen, he was out of there within 5 minutes.
He was mad during the game.
He was out there within 5 minutes, and Drew Rosenhaus was walking him out of the stadium in his ear the whole time. You know, it was
– Let's go.
Yeah, and I don't know what's going on over there, but it's not good. And they look like a team – They look like your father when you start learning how to beat him and pick up basketball. They just couldn't keep up. Right. They were getting frustrated.
Yeah. They didn't like that.
Give me a Bud Light.
Right.
Let me get over here. Let me get settled down, get back in this game.
We've got Jeff Chedia from NFL.com and NFL Network in studio back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Okay, Jeff, the Chiefs come home to face the 49ers for their home opener at Arrowhead on Sunday. What will they be facing in the San Francisco 49ers?
Well, I think they're a team that is quietly on the rise. I like what John Lynch has done over there. I've known him a long time. I have a lot of respect for him, both as a player and a GM, a very smart guy. So I like how they've built the team. A good front. They got a lot of first-round investments on their defensive line. They've got some quick linebackers. They've got Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously, who they've had success with him last year, and he's coming back to earth this season. It's you know, it's funny what happens once film gets out on you, and they've got teams had a long time to look at him and see what he did well. So
they lost, but Stafford put up some big numbers against the 49ers on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely – I don't think the Chiefs are going to lose this game. Of all the games that they had on their schedule coming into this season, I thought this was going to be the easiest one they would get. But I also, these kind of games can also be trap games. You know, you're coming off a couple of really intense games, a couple of really big wins, young team, and it could be easy for them to overlook the 49ers.
Week four is Monday Night Football at Denver.
At Denver, and then you got the Jaguars and the Patriots coming up next. And these are the kind of games that they feel a lot like Buffalo last year, Giants last year, Tennessee, Tampa Bay the year before. The kind of game where you just know the Chiefs were the better team. The opener, a couple of 4 years ago when they lost to Tennessee. Ugh. It's the kind of game where, or even a Chargers game that they had a big comeback when it was 27-3. You just know coming in, there's so much that has gone into these first two games. And not just the players knowing what the games meant, but the coaches knowing what the games meant. And these are two huge opportunities to get a stranglehold on the division and to also get some confidence as far as being a playoff contender and beating Pittsburgh. So they should win the game, and I expect them to win the game, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was a close game.
Okay, but give me a score before we move on. What's going to happen?
Well, if they're averaging 40 points a game, yes. I guess I got to raise the bar.
Yes.
I'll probably take Chiefs 38-21.
And Garoppolo, do you think he's the real deal, or is it too much?
I was never that crazy about him, just knowing the history of quarterbacks who played behind Brady and left New England. He has talent, and he has – capitalize when he's had opportunities to play, but I also feel like he is like all these quarterbacks are in the same boat for me. Like, it's just, we'll hype them up when they do well, and then we'll see them come back to earth, and then we'll see where they go from there. And Patrick's in that same boat. As good as he's played, I think it gives you a ticket into the club. I think I said that a few weeks back. I think Garoppolo's got a ticket into the club. Okay, you've proven you can play. We know you can do some things, but now you have to do it consistently, and you have to do it when people game plan for you, and now you have to have a winning record, and now you have to get your team to the playoffs, like all these things. So for me, the next step for him is showing he can do it consistently and do it for a full season.
The Bears beat the Seahawks last night on Monday Night Football, and I was watching Trubisky, and a lot of similarities in their offense and some of the things that Matt Nagy has carried with him to the Bears from Kansas City. Trubisky taken ahead of Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. What do you think of Trubisky?
I think he's okay. I don't really have anything against him.
Do you think 5-6 years from now the Bears are going to look bad for not only taking him ahead of Mahomes but also Deshaun Watson?
I don't know because I never really, and I get the why people do it because we always want to have some kind of barometer on people, some kind of comp. But I always feel like all these quarterbacks are on their own roads. And so to say Patrick Mahomes in Chicago would be what he is now, I don't think that's true. I think you're not getting Andy Reid.
Right.
You're not getting the skill players. You know, you're not getting Alex Smith with that. And so Mitch Trubisky has had a lot fewer things to work with and had to play all of last year, which affects your confidence and what you see. Good and bad. So do I think Patrick Mahomes will be a better player than Trubisky? Yeah, right now I would say that. And I probably would bet that that's what would happen. I think Deshaun Watson will too. But I don't think because you're the slowest starter doesn't mean you're not going to amount to anything. And nor do I think that he has to be better than those two to justify being the pick he was. You know, I think it's hard. I was in, when we were at Pittsburgh, I was sitting next to Adam Teicher, and as soon as Mahomes was up 21-0, the Chiefs were up 21-0, he looked at me and said, "I told you he's better than Deshaun Watson." And I'm like, does it matter? You know what I'm saying? Does it really matter who's better? If you have Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, do you care that one is better than the other? You know, someone asked, I was listening to Seren the other day, and he was talking about would Alex Smith have won that game, this game in Pittsburgh? And I'm like, does it really matter? You know? I mean, is it because he's gone, the quarterback you have is here, and I think we get caught up in that because we want to be able to say we're right. We want to make the bet and know that we were on top as far as picking the right guy. And at the end of the day, it's like I think there are – if you have a quarterback in the club, it's all that really matters. You know, that club right now is probably 15, 16 deep, and there's half the rest of the league is trying to get in the club. They're in line hoping they got the right look, you know, the right girl with him, so the velvet rope opens up for them.
He's in the club, but I think Mahomes might be in VIP right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, he's got bottle service.
Right. That's exactly right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Josh Gordon saga with Jeff Chedia on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Our special guest, Jeff Chedia, in studio from NFL.com and NFL Network. All right, Jeff. So let's see what happened here with Josh Gordon. He finally showed up, and we all watched this on Hard Knocks on HBO. He finally showed up to camp after the Browns were very, very patient with him, and he plays game one, and he wasn't supposed to start.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started, and then Hugh Jackson said that was a communication error why he started. And so that was kind of bizarre. Yeah. He caught the game-tying touchdown pass in that game, so he made an impact. And then he's good to go. He's not on the injury list or anything throughout the week. And then he shows up Saturday to the facility late, mm-hmm. and he's complaining of a hamstring issue. And then sources start to report, or Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport and other people start to report these sources, that he had injured his hamstring at a photo shoot. Which I'd like to know more about this photo shoot. What's going on here? What kind of pictures are being taken here? And so, he's saying he's not going to be able to play, or he's questionable, or he's going to be out. And so they rule him out, and then they release a statement that they're going to release him. John Dorsey does.
Yeah.
And so then you find out, well, teams are interested in him, and so they're not going to release him. And the report was 8 to 10 teams were inquiring about Josh Gordon. And they have a deadline of Monday where they're going to trade him. And it's the New England Patriots that end up trading for him. The Patriots send the Browns a 2019 fifth-round pick and get back a 2019 seventh-round pick if he's not active for 10 games. And then Shockingly, according to Ian Rappaport, Josh Gordon had an MRI on his hamstring. It came out fine, and he could be good to go for week three with the Patriots. So what the hell just happened?
Good question. And, well, what happened is the Patriots got good again, got lucky again.
What the hell?
Like things just fall in their laps. And I don't understand how you could have all this interest in a player and end up with a fifth-round pick getting the deal done. That makes no sense to me. That
like
nobody would. Dallas
Jags.
Cowboys. Yeah, Cowboys, I give you four.
Or like an AFC team. You think, okay, let's not let this happen in New England.
Yeah, yeah. But there's two things that I think about this whole situation. One is Josh Gordon ever going to be a productive, consistent, play 16 games type player in the league again? I'm not sold on that. There's just been too many things that have happened over the last 5 years, and he's only played in whatever. He's probably played in, I don't know, he's played 16 games that entire time, you know, over a five-year period.
I think 13 games since he had that season.
13 games, yeah. So that's a big question to me. And when you are – I don't even know what kind of photo shoot you could be at if you're him. You haven't been doing anything. what are you taking photos for? Who's doing a story on you? Who's trying to advertise with you?
I want to see these damn pictures. Is what I want to see.
But I think credit to John Dorsey and Hugh Jackson for saying enough is enough. That organization has given him way more time than I've ever seen any organization give any player in 20-some years of covering the NFL. They worked really hard to make sure it worked for him, did everything they could to make sure he was comfortable. And there does come a point when you have to say enough's enough. We've got other players here. Let's give them a chance and move forward. So I get that part of it. The other side of this is what he'll be in New England. And he has a chance to be really good because he's playing with the best quarterback he's ever had. He's playing in a system that is very receiver friendly. He's playing with a very imaginative offensive coordinator, and he's playing in a franchise that doesn't take much any BS. And so there's really two options for him. Either he shows up, puts on his hard hat and his big boy pants and plays at a high level, or he's not going to be there at the end of the season. And we've seen Belichick do this with multiple players, from Corey Dillon to Randy Moss to Chad Johnson, guys who've had issues in one shape or another, bad reps, and two of those guys worked out really well. Helped them win a Super Bowl. Other guy got them to a Super Bowl, and Chad Johnson didn't do much of anything. And that was really more so because he's not a very bright guy, and really couldn't handle their offense. He couldn't pick it up fast enough. But if Josh Gordon comes in and studies and listens to Belichick and finds a chemistry with Brady. Look, they're playing with a whole bunch of spare parts over there on offense, which you start looking at them going against the Chiefs, like they'd have a hard time keeping up because they're talking – they've been trotting out Cordarrelle Patterson and Philip Dorsett,
they signed
Chris Hogan.
Corey Coleman, and then they
Corey Coleman
him
let him go.
To
yeah.
Make, yeah, and so what they're hoping for is Edelman comes back from suspension in a couple of weeks, and then if Gordon – and then if that pans out, then all of a sudden.
Yeah, and Gronk. And that's,
oh, boy.
That's what you got. And it makes sense. Look, there's no real risk for them.
Oh, it's worth
it.
Fifth-round
pick.
It's
worth
it.
Yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me if he became a player over there. But a lot depends on what is going through his head because everybody who's talked about him that I know has always said the same thing. We just hope that he gets his life figured out. And at some point, if you can't do that, then you can't work anywhere for you. So I hope it works out for him. But again, I'm very skeptical of it happening.
This has got to be. I mean, if it doesn't work out there and they give up on him, considering their need and what they have and that infrastructure, I mean, where else could he make it?
I think he'd be done because at this point you're talking about. Amazingly, I don't think he's even 28 years old yet.
No, he's 27.
Yeah, and so it seems like he's been around for like 15 years.
And he's played 11 games since that 2013
season. Okay, 11
season.
Games.
Just, I mean.
Yeah, and so, yeah, he is so talented. I would argue that he's one of the top five most physically gifted receivers in the NFL when his head is right. But he hasn't done it consistently in 5 years. And at some point you have to say, well, it's all that time off. That's got to affect you too. It's a very interesting trade right now. I think the only thing more interesting is Vontae Davis retiring at halftime of the Bills.
You can kind of see it like peace out, I'm out.
Yeah.
I saw that meme with, you know, the kid says peace out and he just disappears.
Yeah.
And someone said Vontae Davis in the Bills locker room at halftime. Peace out.
Hey, where you going, Vontae? I'm leaving. Yeah. I'm going home.
I mean, you know, if that doesn't tell you.
I love that one.
Could you believe that?
You're in there like going over like second half adjustments and
right.
Where you going, Vontae? The bathroom? No, I'm going home. I'm going to the car. I'm leaving.
Out. How bad that situation like,
he
is.
Walks out in a full suit or something like that, whatever he wore in.
Right.
You hurt? No, I'm retired.
So I mean he's done. He's gotta be done. I mean there's not a but
that's one of my favorite stories, man.
What were people like? What's been the reaction around the league of that? Because I know other players were looking at that. Like, what the?
The only story that topped that one for me this past weekend, I'll tell it to you next time because the music's coming. I got time for it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, DJ Williams, real quick. Maurice Jones, you told me a story about DJ Williams, the Broncos linebacker, applying to play on special teams in high school with him.
Right.
And everybody had to fill out, you know, applications and say what they wanted to do. And someone said they would hit their mother on a field.
Right.
Kind of related to the Jalen Ramsey story. DJ Williams made a YouTube video, got his mom in shoulder pads and a helmet, lined her up, kicked the punt to her, took a 30-yard running start, picked up speed at the end, and laid her out.
Laid her out.
Neck and back problems for 10 years after that.
Are you kidding me?
Just so he could play special teams on a high school football team. And that was, to me, was just like, and the whole point was like, these are the kind of guys that want to play in the NFL, end up playing in the NFL, because if you're going to hit your mother and knock her out and videotape it, there's something seriously wrong with you.
You better be paying all the medical bills.
That's right. It paid off for him.
Yeah, right. Jeff, thank you so much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you, man.
That is Jeff Chedid from NFL Network and NFL.com. Have a great day listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.